It may be a certain kind of cookie, a soup, a casserole, or even just a special way to make hot cocoa. Food can connect us with people we love, even after they're gone. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we'll talk about how certain foods connect us to people and the past. I'll talk with sisters who keep their mother's memory alive through food and togetherness. I'll talk with members of the DeBeer family. They collected family photos, stories, and recipes for a cookbook and memoir. And author Jennifer Wilson has been exploring her ancestry through traditional recipes from Croatia. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is a season filled with good smells wafting from kitchens, good food, and a lot of time spent with family. Food is something that can connect us to people that we love, even when they're gone. This hour, we're going to talk about how certain foods and recipes help us maintain those connections. And we want to hear your stories as well. Please email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also post on our Facebook page, or you can tweet us at @IPRTalk. We're going to start the hour with a different kind of story. Beth Howard bakes pie and is the author of Making Peace, a memoir of love, loss, and pie. In the book, she tells the story of how she used baking pie to work through her grief after the loss of her husband. Right now, of course, the nation is grieving over the horrible events at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, last Friday. Almost as soon as Beth learned of the murder, she began to organize a pie-making effort for the people of Newtown. She's in New Jersey now, baking pies with volunteers from all over the place. Good morning, Beth.
Hi.
Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, you're catching me at a super hectic time. So,
I'm sure.
Sorry. The doorbell's ringing and people are coming to help, so and I've got my hands covered in dough at the moment. So, sorry, I'm a little breathless.
That's okay. Beth, what made you want to go to Connecticut to make pie?
Well, I was so saddened by the news, and I just was sitting in my house alone at my computer just, you know, feeling helpless and frustrated and overwhelmed. And, you know, I also experienced my own loss of my husband 3.5 years ago, so I could relate a little too well to the, you know, the sudden loss and the searing pain that grief brings. And I just wanted to be able to do something to help out. And so I just posted this random passing thought on Facebook. You have to be careful about those passing thoughts, you know. And I said that I just felt like I wish I could pack up my RV with my pie baking supplies and, you know, if it would help ease the grief of these people in Newtown, that I would, you know, I'd pack up 100 cases of apples and go there and make pie for them. And then immediately I had this outpouring of comments on my Facebook page saying, yes, do it. We'll chip in for gas. We'll help you pay for apples. We'll, you know, one guy offered to drive with me. And so I, like within minutes, I was like, I guess this is actually going to happen. It was not planned. It was just a spontaneous, you know, thing. Like I said, a passing comment that just turned into this groundswell of support. And then people said, we want to donate money and please set up a PayPal account. So I did. And we've raised over $5,000 now. And obviously, we're not going to spend $5,000 on apples. And people are already donating apples from local orchards here. So we're going to give the money to grief support groups in Newtown, because I know, again, from my own experience, the how valuable grief counseling is to somebody who's experienced loss.
Beth, I understand why you would immediately turn to pie, because obviously this is something that really helped you through your grief. Why are all of the people who are volunteering, all of the people who are helping you with this effort, why do you think they're doing it?
They just want a way to help, and they don't know how. You know, this isn't like a hurricane where people lost power and they need blankets and they need a place to stay. This is, you know, something a little harder to help with. You know, it's harder to reach people's hearts, and I think people are hurting, you know, and there's so much compassion out there that people just want a way to help make people feel better. They want to comfort this pain. And so people are coming together and just saying, let me come and help you make pies. Let me help you hand out free pies on the streets of Newtown. let me do something. Here, I can't make it, but here, take some money. And, you know, it's just, I think people really have compassion, and it's so encouraging to see that. But, you know, there's a lot of love still in the world that, you know, it just restores your faith to know that something awful can happen, and yet, you know, the outpouring of love can sort of bring you back up on your feet.
Some people will question your motives. I'm sure some people probably already have. They might think of this as a publicity stunt. How do you respond to that?
I haven't not had any of that negative comment. I also have to say it's been a little bit annoying to have media calling me. I'm like, that's not what this is about. And, you know, people get wind of it, and they just, I think people are looking for something good within a very bad story. And this is just something that makes people feel a little tiny bit better. You know, the thought of pie, the thought of somebody making pie for these people. I think people are looking for something positive. And if my story can provide a little positive light onto that, then that's fine. You know, but honestly, like, I would need to be making pie right now, not talking to you on the radio.
Right.
So it's just kind of like, it's almost been some unexpected and not what I wanted. And then I feel, on the other hand, I feel a responsibility to do the interviews because, you know, we're raising money for the grief counseling. I go, well, fine. You know, if you want to know about the story, then do something. You know, donate, and we'll leave these people with a good pocket of change, you know, to help them and leave something behind besides pie. And, you know, this wasn't a premeditated idea in any way. It was a fleeting thought that I posted on Facebook, and I wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for the other people who just showed this tremendous amount of enthusiasm for the idea. It wasn't me. You know, it was all these other people who said, we'll chip in. We want you to do this. Please do it. Go. And I happen to be single, and I have the time, and I had the RV, and I didn't have any plans for Christmas. And, you know, I still have my own grief. You know, this is about my grief, too. It's not about publicity. Not at all.
Beth, I know you need to go, but I want to know what happens to all of these pies. How will you distribute them?
We're working on that right now. I've got about 3 people in Newtown who are working on securing us a parking location, and there's a community center and a youth center and the churches. And so there's numerous opportunities for distributing the pies. What I've done in the past is hand out free slices of pie on the streets of Los Angeles. I did that 3 years ago. On National Pie Day, and I wrote about that in my book, Making Peace. And that was a really wonderful thing, because these random slices of pie being handed out to strangers and bringing people together. In this case, I don't really know. I know there are a lot of funerals going on, and we've talked about donating some of the pies to some of the funeral services. So there's a lot of opportunity to distribute pie there. It's just a matter of honing in, and we've got a lot of people offering to help hand out pies or deliver pies and whatnot. So we've got 250 pies that we're planning on taking up there, and I think there'll be more than that, actually.
Wow. Well, Beth, thank you so much for taking a couple of minutes and talking with us this morning.
Thanks, Charity.
Beth Howard is a pie maker. She lives in the American Gothic House. She is right now in New Jersey baking pies with many volunteers for the people of Newtown, Connecticut. Lori Mitchell of Fairfield, Iowa, is one of 4 sisters. Every year she organizes a surprise event for her sisters. And I met her this year when I was at the American Gothic House doing an interview with Beth Howard. She and her sisters spent the afternoon learning to make pie in their mother's memory. Lori and one of her sisters, Kibben Whitman, are here with me now. Hello, ladies.
Good morning, Charity.
Hi, thank you both for being here. And Lori, I know that this idea came to you from a letter that your mother left you when she died 16 years ago. What did she say in that letter?
She had actually written a letter several years before she had passed away with some pretty good life lessons for us. And it was several years after she passed away before we even found the letter she had written. And it put a new light on the way we looked at things, but in one of the sentences she had written, it really resonated with me. She says, work hard, love, be kind, and be your own person. So I've really taken that to heart, maybe at even a higher level since we found that letter. It was very, the timing of it was very, It was how we came across it, the letter, and how we found it was just, it was a very moving time for us. So
I'm sure. And How long have you been planning a surprise for your sisters every year?
I just love when we get together. We started making sure we were together on each of for everybody's birthday. So 4 times a year, we made a point that we got together, and whoever's birthday it is, you get to choose what you want to do. And it's kind of just taken it from there. As many people have probably experienced, when you lose the nucleus of the family, the one who creates and maintains traditions, you look for every way possible to keep those traditions and keep the family together. And that's, we're all busy. We all have busy lives and careers. And so it was a very important step for me to make sure that we could have those, keep making new memories and traditions. So we've had several, 3 or 4 or 5 really meaningful experiences, and sister experiences.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It always takes it to the next level.
So Lori is the one with these amazing ideas, Gibbon?
Yes, and she has now become the glue that holds all of us together like our mom did. So, yes, it's always her, and I don't know how she does it every time, but she tops it every time. So.
Well, and this year you scheduled a pie-making class for you and your sisters, Lori. Why pie-baking?
Well, there's a universal language in grief, and when I read Beth's book, it resonated me at a really high level. And even though, you know, I had lost a mother and she had lost a husband, I could still just so relate, maybe not as much through pie as through cooking with what she, in general, what she was talking about in the book. And after finishing the book, I wanted more. I needed more. So I went to her website, and then that's where I discovered that she had these pie classes. And I knew immediately, that's my next sister. That's my next sister outing. So, and it just took off from there.
So. Well, and Kibben, was making food with your mom, was that something special that you and your sisters did?
Oh, yes. It wasn't. The food makes the memories, I guess, you know, because our mom was a wonderful cook, and I just remember when I was little and at Christmas time stirring the spoon to make fudge, and it was, yeah, she was the best.
And Lori, when making food with your sisters, do you feel closer to your mom?
Oh, yes, and it's even goes deeper even than just the sisters. I think there's several times when, well, in fact, I mean, I'm just so moved that Beth's out in Connecticut, because the first thing I thought, I felt so helpless when I heard of that. I thought, what can I do? And I thought, I bet I can find the Sandy Hook Fire Station address, and I could make them some treats and overnight them in the mail. I mean, things like that, that's where I feel like there's some, if I can help somebody or have, if somebody has some need, I try to fill it with something I could do with them for food. So cooking has always been, that's what my mom did. She always made things special.
Lori Mitchell and Kibben Whitman, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we're talking about how food can connect us with people that we love, even after they've gone. And we'll be talking with travel writer Jennifer Wilson in a moment. She's been exploring her family's ancestry through the foods of Croatia. But joining me right now are Judy Stark of Martinsdale and Rachel DeBeer of Muscatine. And last year, the DeBeer family got together for a huge family reunion. 150 people came to Orange City, Iowa from all over the country. And before the reunion, Judy gathered and edited recipes for a cookbook. Her sister Rachel gathered photos and stories. They put together this cookbook, and they call it the DeBeer Family Cookbook and Memoir. Hello, Judy.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today, and hello, Rachel.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you for being here. Judy, when did you get the idea to put together a cookbook for this big family reunion?
Well, I shamelessly stole it from a friend of mine. I was working at the Winterset Public Library, and Sonia Porter, who works there, had just come home from her reunion in Pella, and they had put together a cookbook and memoir from their 100th anniversary reunion. And that sparked the whole idea for the reunion and the cookbook and the memoir. And the more I thought about it, I just loved the idea of gathering these recipes, not only that we held in our memories that we cherished, but that we could then pass on to our children and our grandchildren. And I also loved the idea that we could incorporate both stories and pictures. So rather than having these cherished memories, you know, gathering dust on some library shelf, they would be in a book that we would pull out every time we wanted to make our favorite recipe, and we could just kind of remind ourselves of our heritage. So that's how it all got started.
Tell me what made this the 100th anniversary reunion. What event were you celebrating?
Well, it was 100 years since my great-grandparents, Feta and Akka De Beer, along with their two daughters and my grandfather at that time, arrived at Ellis Island from the Netherlands. They had boarded a ship in Rotterdam and crossed the Atlantic Ocean, and on April 18th, 1911, they arrived in New York, and there had never been a De Beer reunion in that 100 years. And I thought, well, it's about time. And what better event to hold than a 100th anniversary? So I started investigating where all of these descendants lived and sending invitations to them, and had just a terrific response, and we had a wonderful reunion.
Well, and Rachel, this is clearly a huge undertaking. Did Judy bring this idea to you?
Yes, she did, and I thought it was a great idea. We always loved to get together, and we thought it would be great to meet people we hadn't seen in years, and there were even some people there I had never met that were my relatives.
Well, I'm sure that was a huge gathering. And Judy, did you feel daunted at all by the task? Because I'm guessing you also had to do family research to find out all of the people that you would invite, in addition to starting to collect recipes and stories from them.
Well, that's true. But, you know, what you don't know sometimes is good, because I didn't know how much work it was going to be at the beginning. And fortunately, I was semi-retired, so I had the time on my hands, and once I got going, it was really the enthusiasm of the relatives as they started sending in the recipes and started telling the stories, and then they started doing their own digging into their boxes of photos and pulling out mementos and photos, and the enthusiasm just kind of grew, and people started giving us all kinds of ideas of what we could do at the reunion. And it also was just such a wonderful spark to remember events that we might not have recalled if we weren't putting together this book. So as I was trying to recall recipes, I started remembering times that I had spent with my grandmother, or recipes that had come from an aunt who had passed away, or recipes that my son would call me about from college while he was wandering the grocery store aisle saying, what do I need for this recipe? And so it was a terrific experience for me.
How long did you spend putting this book together?
Well, the idea for the reunion came in about August of 2010, and we had the reunion in June of 2011. And so during that entire time, we were gathering recipes, and I wanted to include photos from the reunion in the cookbook and memoir. So we actually then published the book and distributed it to the entire family in about September or October of 2011. So it was about a 12-month process.
Rachel, as you started to gather the stories and the photos, were there memories that came back to you?
Yes, there were. I had spent a lot of time on my grandparents' farm as a child, and my Aunt Laura was a great entertainer. She was just 5 years older than I am, and we would make playhouses together and then make mud pies. And our playhouses would be in a grove of trees or an abandoned shed. I think we had more fun finding a place for it than actually playing in it. So that memory came back to me. In fact, at one time I had thought of just writing a short story called Aunt Laura, Playhouses, and Mud Pies. And then when Judy came up with this idea of a reunion, I thought, what a great time just to write a descriptive narrative of the whole farm and get input from people that had spent time on the farm. I think there were probably 11 grandchildren that had spent a lot of time on the farm, and then my uncles and aunts, of course, who had grown up on the farm. So I got input from them about their memories of the various rooms, and then I organized the narrative by the rooms of the house and the various outdoor activities that we did.
Oh, that's wonderful. And of course, a lot of action takes place in the kitchen. And Judy, can you share with us your Grandma De Beers potato yeast rolls? Tell us about this recipe.
Yes. Well, my grandma baked bread at least twice a week, and it would be bread and rolls. And you have to understand, this farm kitchen she worked in was primitive. It had no running water. It had electricity, but it had just a cob-fed stove or a wood-burning stove. And yet it was a magical place for us as children. And she had an old oak table that faced east. She would mix her bread, and she'd use leftover mashed potatoes and potato water in this mixture. And it was always available because my grandfather had to have mashed potatoes every single day. That was a requirement of his diet. And so there was always little bits of leftover mashed potatoes and potato water, and I'd watch her mix it up. And I'd watch her as this dough would start rising, and she'd be just rhythmically kneading it. Even though she had arthritis, it was just such a fascinating thing for me to watch. And then as she'd form it into these perfectly round dough balls, she'd give it a whack with the palm of her hand, and I just loved that sound as she just kind of whacked the dough and formed it and put it in the bowl and then covered it carefully with her tea towels and let it rise. And then, of course, you know, the house would just be filled with this fabulous aroma of baking bread, and as soon as it was she was able to cut it, we'd have a piece that we'd then smear with peanut butter and drizzle with honey, and it was just heavenly. I just loved that experience. And so one time I was in, I must have been in junior high, maybe early high school, and I was there, and I said, Grandma, will you tell me what this recipe is? Because she never followed a recipe. She just kind of dumped things together. And so she told me how she made it, and I wrote it down on my little lined paper in my little junior high handwriting. And I have made it many times since then for my family, and they love it. They just, those rolls never last more than a day in my house. And so it's a great memory of her, and as I related it to my uncles and aunts, they also all chimed in of, you know, how wonderful it was to eat that bread that my grandma made. And, you know, they say bread of life. It was definitely the bread of life.
Oh, that's so wonderful. There's another recipe that you include in the book that is so very simple, and it's for making hot cocoa. And this was shared by one of your sisters, but I love one of the details in the recipe. Make sure you clink the spoon on the side of the cup.
Yeah.
So it's not just about the cocoa.
That's right. And I believe on that same recipe, she says, serve with a smile, a servant's heart, and unconditional love. And that's exactly what we felt from my grandmother as she served us that hot cocoa. So, you know, recipes like shared garden plants always remind you of people that you love that have given them to you and that you want to pass on to others.
Oh, that's wonderful. Will you be making something this holiday season that reminds you of your grandmother?
Well, I'll be making those potato yeast rolls, definitely. And I will be making the banana bread that reminds, in fact, I just made the banana bread 2 days ago that reminded me of my aunt who gave me that recipe. And I'll
the
be
corn
making,
pie.
We'll be making the corn pie. Yes, Rachel can tell you about the corn pie.
Okay, Rachel.
Well, the corn pie is from an old Farm Journal cookbook, and it's really a must-have at all our holiday gatherings. It's got a saltine cracker crust on it, and then it's made with the whole kernel corn and eggs and milk and salt and so forth. And it is just so good. It's better than any other corn dish I've ever had.
Oh, you guys are making me hungry already. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Well, thank you for inviting us, and hope you have a wonderful holiday filled with good food.
Absolutely, and thank you for sharing your cookbook with me.
You're
thank
welcome.
You.
Thank you. Judy Stark of Martinsdale and Rachel DeBeer of Muscatine, sisters who together put together the DeBeer Family 100th Anniversary Reunion cookbook and memoir for a giant family reunion in 2011. And with me on the line now, we're still talking about food and how it connects with connects us with other people, connects us with people even after they're gone. On the line now is Jill Means, and you may have heard her on the show before. She is one of the co-authors of a cookbook called Two Chicks from the Sticks, Back Home Baking. And we've talked about some of these wonderful recipes in the past. Hello, Jill.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, great. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Yeah, thank you. This will be a lot of fun.
And Jill, when you started to put together this book of recipes with your best friend, the two of you went back and gathered all these recipes from your mothers and your grandmothers and all of the women in your communities. What is your thought this time of year as people are doing all of this baking? How important do you think it is to not just think about what you're making, but how it connects you with other people?
Well, I mean, as you know, Charity, this is the premise of our whole book. So this time of year for me and Jamie is especially meaningful, and it sort of kind of brings it all together. I think it's very important. And on our Facebook page, we're talking about the 12 days of Christmas, where we're highlighting our favorite cookies or favorite baking recipes that we have for the season. And I think it's really important. I think our whole thing has been about bringing our memories together so that we can share that with our kids and they can have those same sort of traditions and memories for themselves as they're growing up as well.
What will you be making, Jill, for the holidays?
Lots of things. We've been baking since Thanksgiving, and yesterday my son and I made spritz cookies, and we are also making lemon curd that I'm going to give as our neighbor's gifts this year. So we made lemon curd and put them in cute jars with a ribbon, and then we're going to hand them out. I didn't blow the surprise for my neighbors. But that's what we're making this year for gifts. And we've just been making all kinds of cookies. And this year, for some reason, I've had a huge craving for my mom's ginger snap cookies. So we've made quite a few batches of ginger snap cookies and chocolate crinkles and all those yummies.
Yes, I used your recipe for chocolate crinkles on Saturday morning,
which
turned out great, by the way. Is there something from your past that you always need to include in your holiday baking or your holiday meals?
Well, certainly my mom's Buckeyes, the chocolate or the peanut butter balls with the chocolate coating, those are always in the mix because everybody loves those so much. For my husband, we always have to make the pecan tassies. So the little mini, I call them little mini pecan pies, those are his favorites, so those are always in our mix. And then his family are very Swedish, so we always have to make spritz cookies as well. So those are the three for sure that we have to have.
And you talk about making them with your son. When you're baking with your son, and I know Jamie bakes with her kids too, what do you try to work into that moment? Do you try to do anything to make it special?
Well, I have boys, so the fact that they even want to be in the kitchen with me is a treat. So, you know, we have to keep things moving, and it's just, you know, sharing those laughs, and if one of us spills flour on each other or on the floor, it's okay, and we just have a good time when we're in there. And I try and to be very patient, because I think when you're baking anyway, even if you're by yourself, you have to be patient, and adding another set of hands at the kitchen with you, and trying to, you know, keep that as a cherished moment and just be really patient and enjoy every moment of that.
Well, Jill, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Thank you. Can I just add that if anybody wants a book for Christmas, our website is down, and that they can email Jamie and she will get them off a book, if that's okay.
Okay.
Her email address is jamie@twochicksfromthesticks.com. So it's jamie@twochicksfromthesticks.com.
All right, Jill, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jill Means is one of the co-authors of the cookbook Two Chicks from the Sticks. She and her best friend, Jamie Gorey, grew up in Southern Iowa, and in this cookbook they share all kinds of recipes from their youth, from their mothers, from their grandmothers, from their neighbor ladies and neighbor gentlemen as well. In a moment, we'll continue our conversation about food and how it connects us with our past, how it connects us with people in our lives even after they're gone, and we want to hear your stories as well. Give us a call at 866-780-9100, tweet us at IPR Talk, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about food and how certain foods, certain recipes connect us with the people that we love, with people from our past, and even with our ancestors. And with me now is Jennifer Wilson. She is a travel writer and author of the memoir Running Away to Home, and she's just put the book out in paperback. And in the paperback version of the book, she includes a number of recipes from the old country, from Croatia, and she's here with me today. Hello, Jennifer.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming back to Talk of Iowa.
Thanks for having me back.
So you talk a lot about food in your memoir, and when you traveled to Croatia, when you lived there for nearly a year, you did a lot of eating as well. a lot of strange things, but you also clearly went with an idea that you could learn something about yourself and your family's history, not just from being there, but from eating the food as well. Why was that important to you?
You know, for me, I found out pretty quickly that I'm sort of genealogy dyslexic. Like, it was really tough for me to build an esoteric family tree with all the ephemera that goes along with it. And for me, it seemed like a much more relevant way of connecting with my ancestors for me and my family to sort of eat my way into the past. My husband Jim and I, you know, sort of refer to ourselves as feeders rather than foodies. And we love to eat when we go to a place to kind of get a handle on where that is and what it's all about. And for me, being in the village, it was the village who very quickly sort of showed me that, yes, I could connect with some old relatives, but it was important for me to know the historic recipes of that village itself. They were very adamant about teaching me how to cook the way they always have in Merkopi, Croatia. It was very moving. And when my publisher came back and said they wanted to do a paperback version of the book, they'd wanted me to write an extra chapter. And I said, you know, what people really have reacted to in such a strong way is the food in the book. They don't want to hear me yammer on anymore. They want to know how to cook some of these things. And they finally relented, and the paperback version now includes several recipes that have just been what people have really reacted to in such a strong way that it really took me by surprise.
When you started to learn to cook with the women of Merkopi, were there written down recipes, or were they just showing you how they did it?
They were just showing me. I was writing things down and because there was such a language barrier, I knew the language, but on a very basic level. And so I was really, my recipes as I wrote them out were very tactile. It was, you know, and now you roll out the dough in this clockwise motion. It was a really long recipe to follow because it was all me just watching the history of my village sort of through the hands of the women in it. It was pretty powerful stuff.
Well, and you write about how that's because you had limited language. That's really how you connected with the women, not just through food, but through weeding a garden and
right.
actually getting your hands dirty and helping them with some of the very hard work that they still do.
That's right. I mean, one of the most popular recipes in the book is for a Croatian nut pastry called povitica. And I've heard it pronounced a lot of different ways. And it's throughout Eastern Europe. You know, there's povitica, you know, some people, there's all sorts of different ways to pronounce it. But you can actually buy it from a couple of places now. Strawberry Hill is a Kansas City place that sells povitica, and another one in Kansas is Old Country Bakery. And sometimes they're at Costco, which is totally funny to me. But in the village, they taught me how to make povitica. They even ground their own walnuts for it. And it took more than 3 hours to make this recipe. And it's when I sort of understood that these old family recipes that are passed down through the generations, it's not just about, they're usually not simple and they're really not short. It's more about the time we spend together. And it's really like a tactile memory for us to connect with our family or the people that we love.
As you wrote these recipes down, did you, once you wanted to publish them in the book, did you try to compare recipes that you found online, or how did you make sure your recipe was right?
I did work with a couple of people who were pros. For povitica, at my first reading, there was a reader named Joni Ward who had been who had followed the blog from the very start, and we were sort of connected electronically while I was in Croatia, and she brought me two fresh loaves of povitica to my first reading at the Des Moines Public Library, and it was exactly like our neighbor Anna in the village. And so I actually worked with her kind of comparing what I had written down and what she does for her recipe to come up with what you now see in the book. And it's a pretty spot on village. It's not even an imitation. It's what we ate there.
I'm talking with Jennifer Wilson. She's the author of Running Away to Home, a travelogue about returning to live in her family's ancestral mountain village in Croatia. It's now out in paperback, including some of these old recipes that have been passed down through many, many generations of Croatian women. And we'd love to hear from you as well. We're talking today about food and how it connects us to the people in our lives, how it connects us to people that we love and even people that we've lost. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post on our Facebook page. We've had a couple of wonderful comments. This is from Susan in Washington. She says, making food that has a history in your family is something that is healing. 2 years ago at my mother's funeral service, my sister stood up and asked the congregation how many people had ever tasted my mom's butterhorn rolls and homemade pie. The entire congregation smiled and raised their hands. It was a good moment. Right now, I'm making those rolls and her homemade pie dough because it's a connection of something good I can do for my family, and maybe I do this somewhat for myself as well. It's a wonderful story. We also have this comment on our Facebook page from Kelly. She says, I always think of my grandma whenever I eat oatmeal raisin cookies, but none will ever be as good as hers. And that is a phenomenon that even if you have the recipe, sometimes you can't recreate that taste of what was made by someone that you love. Again, you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. And Jen, let's talk about another more unusual recipe that you include. And I'll try to say this. Is it, well, Jello Dots?
Yeah, that's a good phonetic way of saying it. Jello Dots is it is the only recipe, actually, that, well, there was two. Povitica, my Aunt Terry made that as well, and she did a good job with that. Jello Dots was the second recipe that sort of made it down through the generations in my family. And it literally translated in Croatian, it means stomach. And that's one of the things that I find really fascinating about these sort of heritage recipes is that they're really antique in ingredients as well. And Jello Dots, Grandma Kate and I would make it. We'd make it on Good Friday, and then we couldn't eat it because it has meat in it. And you'd eat it on Easter morning with a green onion, and it sort of gave you luck in the coming year. But it was funny because in the village, I tried to describe to some of the women, they would sit around and they would say, okay, what do you know and what can we teach you? And with gelidos, they asked me what I remembered about it. And I said, well, I remember the ingredients. There were eggs and cornmeal and green onions and ham and raisins. And it was cooked. She always cooked it in a pressure cooker. And they all just sort of looked at each other with this really alarmed look. They thought that I had gotten the wrong village because I was describing a recipe for gelidots that was made in the village 1 kilometer away.
So they thought they were going to reveal that
they're
you
like,
had gone
honey,
to the
you're
wrong
in
place
the
entirely.
Wrong place because that's the Sungur gelidots, the Merkapai gelidots. But then they did all of the women sort of scattered around town and talked about this big controversy. And they came back to me later and said, actually, you do have the original ancient gelidot recipe. We had to change ours because Sungur copied it, and we changed it to something that they couldn't copy, and ours now has 40 eggs in one serving of it.
Oh my!
I know. You just get you get heart failure. You're just talking about it.
Absolutely. Do you still make this?
I make gelidots. Yeah, and you know it's tough to find a sheep stomach. So we just I do mine in just sausage casings or pig intestine, and then I boil it that way.
And is that a shortcut? That's okay. Is that
it is? It's
Merkapai
worked.
Approved?
It's worked for me. It doesn't enhance the taste, but I've found that gelidots is really something that's very regional.
Wonderful. We do have a number of people on the phone who want to share their stories at 866-780-9100. Sue is on the line in Pleasant Hill. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I've so enjoyed your stories and your sharing and the heritage today. I'm a pretty good basic cook. I married a man that was somewhat older than I, and his mother was like the age of my grandmother. So I fixed potato soup one night for dinner, and he says, it's really good, but there's no lumps. And it was like, lumps? And lumps. And so I fix, you know, we have fried chicken and I fix gravy. And he says, you know, it's pretty good, but there's no lumps. And I'm losing my mind because for me, I mean, I've worked hard to master no lumps. So his mother explains to me that she, for thickening, used an egg yolk and all the flour that you can stir into that egg yolk to make a thickening, and it, of course, made little dumplings. But I also learned from my mother-in-law that I could stir in all the ingredients from her recipes, but I could never stir in the memories.
Hmm.
And I think that just so is the essence of your conversation today. Is
absolutely.
I'm about to have a candy-making afternoon with a friend, and I have my granny's recipes that they'll never taste. I mean, bring to a boil, stir and boil for 7 minutes. Do not burn. It's like, am I cooking this to a hard ball or a soft ball? No, I'm going to set the timer and boil it for 7 minutes.
Oh.
And it'll work, but it won't be the same as to when I was the little girl sitting and cutting dates for my granny.
Yeah.
Oh, Sue, that's wonderful.
Thanks for a great morning, and looking forward to getting to the book. It's on my book club list, so thank you so much.
Oh, that's great. You know, I think one of the things that's a challenge about these heritage recipes, I guess you could call them, is that they are a little elusive because the people who made them knew how they were supposed to turn out and sort of had their own tricks that they used and maybe just didn't want to write that down on the recipe, or it maybe got lost in translation. But that was, you know, it's almost sort of a fact-finding mission at one point. Jim makes his mom's oatmeal peanut butter chocolate chip cookies, which is a recipe that we included in the book, and they're just so good. But he made about five – he had to do it about five times, the whole batches, just to try to get them exactly right the way she used to make them. I gained a lot of weight during that period. But you do there are those little – there are just those little mysteries that if you're really diligent, you can figure them out. But there is something that is very almost spiritual about these old
Absolutely.
Recipes.
Well, one of my favorite people in the world is still living. She's a wonderful woman, Irma Lester of Ogden, Iowa. And she made the best sugar cookies that I have ever had in my entire life. And a few years ago, she gave me her recipe.
Ooh.
And they taste nothing like her cookies.
Why don't you send me some and I'll be the judge of that.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you'd love them. They taste good.
Yum.
But they just can't match that. And we have one family recipe that's been passed down in our family. We're not a family of cooks, but it's for something called Fudgens, which are supposedly a kind of German donut, and they are made also again in Ogden, Iowa, by many different families. And in the recipe that we had handed down, it says to use a walnut-sized amount of shortening. Is that a shelled walnut? I don't know.
You won't know that.
No, but they taste good when we make them. Phil is on the line next from Des Moines. Hi, Phil.
Hi, how are you? Love this program. I'm a reader of your blog, and I really appreciate all the things you've done.
Yay, thanks.
I am the grandson of a Croatian immigrant.
Oh, wow.
And, well, actually, she was born here in this country. She's for the first 4 years of her life, she spoke only Croatian. And I guess my great-grandparents were from a village called Prokopa. And I know you mentioned that.
Right.
But my question is, I know that before she died 2 years ago, my family had done some research in her kitchen and trying to master what she's done. And I was wondering if you know if there are any really good resources out there as far as videos on how to produce kvapica. I know that... There are a couple different variations on it. My wife's family is actually ancestors from came over to Omaha. We're from Slovenia, and they actually call it kvapica.
You know, you can
the
best resource for you, I think, is there's a whole community of people from Merkopi who have started their own Facebook page since the book came out. It's called Descendants of Merkopi on Facebook. And join that page and ask that question. And everybody's making kvapica on there right now and sharing photos and tips and ideas and resources. That's the best. I mean, get into that group mind and have them help you out. That's the absolute best resource right now for in the kvapica community.
the broad community that is. Phil, thank you so much for your call.
Thanks, Phil.
And we have Margaret on the line from Ellsworth. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. The lady mentioned that she couldn't get oatmeal raisin cookies to taste like her grandmother's.
Uh-huh.
My brother's wife said she has made every oatmeal raisin cookie recipe in the world. But I finally found my mother's recipe, and she ground the raisins.
Ah.
You know, soaked them in warm water and then put them through the old-fashioned grinder.
So after all this time, how did you find her recipe?
1 year for Christmas, my father gave me her old handwritten recipe book.
Oh,
where she'd written down her mother's and her grandmother's recipes.
Oh, how fortunate.
Which were cooked in wood stoves, and none of them had time on them, and none of them had temperature on them.
That was one of the recipes we had from Merkopi was Baka Anna, Grandma Anna down the street, taught me how to make sarma for Christmas, which is cabbage rolls. And my heating instructions are put 2 sticks in the stove and burn down, put 2 more sticks in the stove and burn down, then put in your sarma.
Margaret, thank you so much for your call today. Happy holidays to you. And Jennifer Wilson, thank you very much for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always fun.
And what will you be making next for your holiday season?
Well, husband is busting out the lefse grill, and he's going to make his yearly, if Jim is listening, he is going to make the yearly lefse, right? And we're gonna have that on Christmas Eve with cod, and that's our family tradition. We're going Norwegian this year, as we do every Christmas.
Oh, wonderful. Happy holidays, Jennifer.
You too.
Jennifer Wilson is a travel writer and author of the book Running Away to Home. You can find her blog at jennifer-wilson.com. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry, with technical support from John Pemble in Des Moines. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, Dysfunctional Family Holidays. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News.